The recording is starting.
Maybe we should call this to order then, Alan. I mean, I'll just act as your proxy temporarily.
We have requested that the recording be started. I'd like to welcome you all to the Post-Expiration Domain Name Recovery PDP Working Group. I think we have the record of the longest name of any PDP working group around, but maybe not. Untrue? Okay. Marika, you said that Ron Wickersham was on Adobe Connect. Is he also dialed in? Maybe you can send him a message on now. Okay. The background of this, for those of you who don't know. Oh, good. Okay. So we have our dial-in participant, Ron Wickersham, from the NCUC, who has been one of our loyal participants in the working group. But we will record that you're here. The background of this PDP is to essentially investigate, or the request was to investigate whether registrants are able to claim reclaim or renew domain names after expiration. The issue was originally brought up by the at-large advisory committee. It was an issues report was created by ICANN staff, and it went to the GNSO, and the GNSO approved unanimously to initiate a PDP in June 2009. The charter that was created by the GNSO identified five specific questions related to renewal. New renewal practices and policies, and the working group was charged with coming up with either best practices or policy to address these issues as appropriate. We published our initial report in May 2010. At that stage, we felt it was important to go public and talk about what we were doing. We were having, at that point, still a lot of problems identifying exactly how to address the issues and even identify to what extent the issues were needed to be addressed. So that report did not have any recommendations. Accordingly, we are now publishing a further report with specific recommendations in it. We received a number of public comments, and we also initiated a public survey at that time, which gave us some interesting input, which we used to help formulate the recommendations. The final report has 14 recommendations in it as it stands now, and there's a public comment period open until April 7th. The summary of our recommendations is our three main directions. The working group believes that with these recommendations, registrants have additional guarantees which are not there today. We will improve registrant education and comprehension. The working group identified very early on that a lot of domain names are lost or potentially lost, and certainly a lot are not renewed on time simply because of lack of understanding on the part of the registrant. And moreover, the recommendations are all in line with current practices of most registrars and should have minimal impact on most registrars and the other affected stakeholders, resellers, for instance, and registries. So although we believe the changes are important, they are not likely to cause great tremors within the industry. The first group of recommendations essentially talk about how the world will be different or potentially different to a registrant. I'm having trouble here. The first recommendation defines the registered name holder at expiration. This is important because the current RAA never really talks about who is allowed to renew after expiration. It is assumed during the life of the domain, whoever owns it has the right. However, registration agreements very often allow the registrar to change the who is information, which is normally presumed to be the home, you know, the place you look to see who has the rights to renew. And that's not necessarily the case after. So we're formally defining the term that we then use in the following recommendations. Recommendation 2 says there shall be a minimum of 8 days after expiration when the registered name holder can renew, and during these 8 days, the domain will no longer function as it did originally. That specifically, not functioning should get the attention of a registrant, even if the emails that have been sent out, perhaps repeatedly in many cases, have not been successful. The recommendation does not say anything about how many days the registrar can offer, but it shall be no less than 8. Recommendation 13 says if the registrar after expiration redirects a web page to another page, which many do right now, that page has to explicitly say this is an expired domain and provide instructions or a link or something for the registered name holder to begin the renewal process if they choose. And recommendation number 3 makes clear the implied reason for number 1, that is, changes to who is must not affect the ability to renew. The next set of recommendations have to do with making sure the registrant has the information they need to reasonably renew. The first one says that any fees that will be charged after expiration must be disclosed ahead of time. The number 9 says that the registration agreement and the website must tell you how they plan to deliver notifications to you. It's all well and fine to say the registrant should pay attention to notifications, but in some cases it's not clear just how those notifications will reach them, and because of email problems, spam, and other things, it may be potentially difficult if they don't know what address the notifications will be sent to, where they're being sent from, and a whole bunch of other things like that. 10. Recommendation 10 says there shall be at least 2 notices prior to expiration. That's not a technical change from the current RAA, but the current RAA says it in a rather obtuse way, and we're simply saying that this must be stated clearly so there's no misunderstanding on the point of view of registrars, as there have been in cases in the past. 12 is a new one that says there must be at least 1 expiration notice after expiration. And again, as mentioned earlier, this isn't a change in practice for most registrars. Most already do this. 11 says notifications of expiration must include methods that do not require explicit action on behalf of the registrant. The specific target of this is some registrars say the notifications will be sent via the domain management system on the registrar's website, which requires proactive logging on to that site before you get the notifications. And the registrants that we're talking about in many cases are not ones who check their domain registrations day by day. They may only own one and don't even know there's a website to look at. Recommendations 4 and 5 say that the redemption grace period, which is a service offered by registries, must be offered by all unsponsored registries. Right now, almost all unsponsored registries do offer it, but there's no requirement in the new applicant guidebook that any future registries do it. And it's expected that if it's not there and not anywhere else, most of them will simply not do it. They'll have enough other things on their plate. And 5 says that if a registry offers the RGP, then a registrar must offer that service also. Without that condition, it's possible that a domain could be deleted by the registrar, being held by the registry for redemption, but the registrant cannot redeem it because the registrar doesn't offer the service. Number 8 says ICANN will develop a number of educational materials to try to educate registrants on what they must do for the care and feeding of their domain. 7 says that ICANN registrars must link to this information when and if it's created. And the last one, 14, is not a policy recommendation but a best practice. It was deemed to be something that was moderately important, but it wasn't clear that every registrar could really implement it easily due to technical reasons. And so we're doing it as a best practice. And this specifically says if you're sending email after expiration and that email is being destined at the domain in question, so if it's blah.org and the mail is being sent to me at blah.org, if the registrar has already disabled blah.org, that email won't get through. And registrars who send mail after expiration should be cognizant of this and try to use some other method of reaching the applicant, not an email which is known to be known that it will get lost. Now, a number of these recommendations, if you look at the full report, have bracketed language. There's a number of explicit questions that are being asked. So there is some work that we simply didn't have time to do, and we would appreciate input so that in the final report we get it right. As I said, the comment period is open until April 7th. There's a lot of documentation on the web that you can read, the previous reports and a lot of detailed interim documents that we have. We strongly suggest you look at them. And that's it. I do have slides on each of the recommendations one by one if people have particular questions, or I can simply go into some of them if you would like more details and don't have questions, but I'd like to open it up to questions at this point. We finish early and go back to the GTLD session?
Anything but that.
For those of you behind there, there are room at the table if you want to come up and speak, and we have microphones. Evan.
Alan, the only comment I have about this is that so much of this just seems so common sense. I mean, I appreciate the work that the working group has been doing on this and really want to support it. Frankly, I have a hard time understanding what the arguments would be against these kind of recommendations.
I'll let other people talk about the arguments against if they choose. I think part of the answer when you say they're common sense is if you look at the RGP, if you talk to the people who were around and took part in the creation of the RGP 10, 11 years ago, they sort of assumed it would become commonplace and everyone would implement it, but it never got written. No one ever went through the process of policy development to actually write it in as a consensus policy, so it never got done. So some of those are, we just never got around to it. Other things are commonplace for most of the registrars. When we started this, and if you go back even into the request for issues report, it was always clear that we were not trying to change the whole industry practices. We were trying to get outliers and some of the small registrars who, some people view as preying on unknowing registrants to get in line with the practices of the larger registrars and the practices that most of us are familiar with. So, as I said in my preamble, we're not expecting major changes in what the registrars, certainly around this table, are likely to have to do. But it will require other registrars to change their practices, perhaps, I don't know, not radically, but certainly to provide some guarantees. So if they're commonplace and don't raise any eyebrows, we may have done a good job. Like all compromises, I suspect, well, I know the users on the working group feel that we haven't done enough, and probably some registrars feel we've done too much. That may be the only way to measure quality, is everyone's happy, unhappy. Go ahead.
My name is Vladimir Shadronov. I'm working for Telnik, the .tel registry. I have a question. So I apologize in advance if the answers are somewhere in that report, and if I might have missed them. But anyway, your report, it says, touches upon various grace periods which are currently provided by the registries. Though you're only talking about the RGP, the redemption grace period, in fact, there are some implications of that. For example, any registry that's currently offering the RGP has, as part of this RGP, has some kind of exemption, which is that the RGP is not provided if a domain is deleted within a short time frame after the registrations, which is known as ad grace period, right? The next thing, in your recommendation number 2, you're saying that for at least 8 consecutive days after the expiration, the DNS resolution must be interrupted. This, in my opinion, implies that the registries must provide also the so-called renew grace period, whereas the registrar will have some time after expiration to actually renew the domain name and without being billed. So, in my point of view, this there's just not enough details discussing the specifics of the implementation of various grace periods. So is this vagueness, is this intentional, and do you think it's, if we follow that path, then some additional policy development process must follow to define all the details?
I'll answer the very last part of the question, then I'll turn it over to one of our work group members to answer the specifics. No, vagueness was not intentional. On the other hand, we were trying to limit the report to less than 400 pages, and therefore we did not try to define everything. Although we've defined things, we have not tried to explain the whole process. We did go through a process at one point of trying to graph out and flowchart out the current renewal process. We spent several weeks on it, had a flowchart that spanned several pages, determined it to be incomprehensible, and never pursued it. The current process is somewhat complex. But Michael, can you try to address the specifics?
So to your first question about the ad grace period, certainly that takes precedent. It's an overruling grace period over RGP. As long as you're in ad grace takes precedent. So that's the answer to that, and that's why we didn't explicitly state that, because we felt it was obvious. But maybe we put a clarification in there if it's not. As for the 8 days, I think I'm reading this now on the screen and thinking it says provide a minimum of 8 days after expiration, and probably the language would be a little bit more clear if it said after at some point after expiration. Because that 8 days doesn't necessarily have to be from day 1 to day 8 after expiration. It could be day 20 to day 28. So that's just a clarification for you. So there is flexibility or determination upon different people's business models and implementation to move that period where it makes sense within the existing expiration structures that we have today.
Thanks.
I'll also add, you made some comment about the registrar not being billed. There is currently a 45-day period, or an up to 45-day period, under which the registrar can, depending on the registry, they may pay, they may not pay the fee. If they pay the fees, they would get it back if they delete it before the end of the 45 days. So there's no net cost to them at that point, although there is a cash flow potential. That's already an existing auto-renew grace period, which is a grace period between the registry and the registrar. And we're not altering that. That already exists.
I believe that's a choice of an individual registry, whether to provide this auto-renew grace period or not to provide it. So we may have a registry at some point in the future that chooses not to provide one.
No, I believe the auto-renew grace period is part of the EDDP, a 2004 consensus policy. Yeah, and all of them have to provide it. There is a choice on whether they bill the registrar immediately and give it back if it's deleted, or they don't bill till the end. But the existence of the grace period, I believe, is required. The registrar can delete immediately, but the registry does not have an option whether to offer it or not.
Okay, thanks.
Everyone's all happy, or at least
don't push us. Don't push us.
Wasn't the measure of success that we're all unhappy?
Yeah. I mean, it might be worth. I mean, one of the things that did come up in the GNSO update on Saturday was with respect to both prioritization and also whether reflecting the level of support for recommendations. So it might be helpful, Alan, if you were to actually mention that.
In terms of the level of support, I believe we are effectively required when we finally turn a final report into the GNSO to indicate to what extent these recommendations are approved by the work group. At this point, we have had no significant objections to them, but we were working right down to the line, and we didn't have an opportunity to take a formal poll as we had planned to. But at this point, no. Very few working group members and no active working group members have registered objections as of today. That may change, of course, out of this meeting, but that's a different issue. In terms of prioritization, there was a request at the GNSO that we prioritize the recommendations. My answer at that point was we already have to a large extent in that the ones that did not require that did not seem to have a significant amount of support and someone didn't feel strongly about got omitted altogether. We even omitted a couple, or at least one, that everyone felt very strongly that we should do, but the implementation details were sufficiently confusing and difficult that we chose to leave it out. That specific one was currently... Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Alan, I'd just like to say, though, in all fairness, the reason we stack lists vertically instead of horizontally is because all things are not equal. And even if there's a list, then it has an inherent prioritization. I think we should try and prioritize it.
We'll certainly discuss it. We've been charged with it. Marika?
It is Marika, and I think that's something I said in an earlier discussion we had as well with another working group. To me personally, it doesn't make sense to prioritize those items that are recommendations for changes to consensus policies or new consensus policies because they move into implementation, so there's no real need to prioritize it. I think the only items that you want to prioritize are those that require additional work. So I think there's an item in there asking for educational materials by staff. I think there's an item on best practices. So I think it might make sense for the working group to look at those items that would require further work and maybe prioritize those if there's agreement in the working group so the council has an indication of what the working group considers the highest priority. But for those items that are changes or additions to consensus policies, I'm not really sure what would be achieved with prioritizing those.
I'd like to comment to that. When you introduce multiple required changes, you just can't start the race, you know, three different races when the runners are all in the same race at the same time necessarily. So the council may say, well, you know, within reason, there is a timeline to these things once they're activated, right? So, and they have some discretionary ability to say, you know, item number, all the top three items are PDP and must be compliant within, was it 180 days typically? But because we're asking all three of these to come in, you know, we're going to ask one to be, number two will get a little longer, number three will get a little longer in consideration of the fact that all of them have to be done. That is something that could be a possibility, and if someone wants to take that, or even if someone, there's a right for registries and registrars to object and ask for additional time, a prioritization of the things that are required to do would help that process.
I agree, but isn't that more a comment with regard to implementation than for the council? Because once a council adopts and moves to implementation, I think there it's very valuable to say, if you say, look, we don't think from the working group perspective that all these things should be implemented at the same time. We want staff to consider, you know, moving this gradually and, you know, moving along this route. I don't know if that's a council issue.
We did address this in at least one of the recommendations where we acknowledge, where we recognized that there may be very significant delays in implementing it, and we explicitly said that this should not necessarily be on the same timeline as the other items. And I believe we will, I would almost guarantee that we will do something like that on a more general case. We've seen in other PDPs that the whole process was delayed because of one item on it, which is difficult. And staff has taken different positions on different PDPs. Some of them, they said, we must do it all at once, and therefore we're going to delay the whole bunch. And in other ones, they have identified some things which are more difficult. My personal feeling is we should explicitly say we don't want one part delayed for another part if they're not actually tightly coupled. But Marika is right. In general, working groups, the PDPs have not specified that, but it's come back as part of implementation. I would like us to be more proactive than that. But that's prioritizing in terms of implementation, not necessarily it's not important, don't do it.
I agree with you, Alan. I mean, I think there's no reason for, if it comes down to the implementation should happen more serially or more complicated. It's, we might as well as a working group now indicate what we think should go first.
And if I can just make a more general comment, because actually that's one of the items that's currently proposed as well in the new GNSO PDP, where there's a proposal to actually have an implementation review team that would consist of members of the working group or council or whoever interested that can provide input on those kind of issues when it moves to implementation. So maybe in this case it's something that the working group might already want to recommend that such a team is created, as there are, you know, maybe certain implications or feedback that might be requested, because indeed the working group might make certain recommendations, but when staff starts implementing, maybe there are certain considerations why they would change the order, and it might be good to have a sounding board in that case to say, okay, this is why we think it's better to do it this way. You know, would you agree or not, and why not? So that might be something to consider.
In my mind, the current GAC consultations are an example of what happens when we keep on throwing documents over walls at each other and don't actually talk to each other. And I think there's an intent as we go forward to actually talk to each other and not have those kind of problems. But I think the advice is well taken, and I hope we'll follow it.
Yeah, can we also include a easy-to-understand chart of the present practices in terms of the time gaps and the recommendations for people to understand easily the before and after of the working group?
I don't disagree, but I'm not sure that comparing present practices to the recommendation will tell someone a lot about what will happen. I mean, right now, most registrars, according to the survey, all registrars that we surveyed, in fact, which cover 60 to 70% of all GTLD registrations, the registrars offer somewhere between 30 and 40 days.
If
I may, I don't expect, but I may be naive, that all registrars will lower that down to 8 days immediately, once the policy says you must provide at least 8.
they may be allowed to. They're allowed to zero, set it to zero right now. There's a difference between, there are three things. There is what is currently guaranteed, what they must provide, what they do provide, and we're saying they must provide in the future. So those are the three columns, and I have no problem presenting all of them. The current one is obviously a variable number depending on the registrar. But, yes, okay.
Maybe there could be three columns. One is currently what is required by contract by the registrars to provide. That may be zero.
Siva, why don't you just do it? Why don't you just do it? Because the thing is, you're asking about doing something. You've been in this working group as long as I have and other members have.
Okay.
If you feel strongly about this, why don't you just do it?
Okay.
Do it. I mean, there's no point discussing the production of this. I'm not going to do it because I literally don't have the time. Other members of this working group probably don't have the time. If you want to do it, do it. If we think that what you've done doesn't represent reality, we'll tell you.
Okay. No problem.
I will give the standard disclaimer, which all PDP chairs are required to at this point. Although we are carefully taking notes about the comments that are made at this meeting, please submit comments to the public comment period if you want to make sure they're documented and others can see them. Last call for questions.
This is Michele. When is the comment period opening and closing, just to remind people?
It has opened. It opened on February 21st when the report was posted. That was a surprise to a few of us on the working group who thought it was going to open at the end of this meeting, but we got it wrong. It, at this point, closes on April 7th, subject, of course, to extension if requests are made. In the absence of any further questions, I call this meeting to a close. Thank you for coming.